Movie Wars.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another very special Movie Wars podcast mini. If you're wondering why I'm talking like Geralt of Rivia from The Witcher, it's because I am in my vocal booth and I was in between cutting some voiceover auditions and I'm on my favorite microphone. And when I'm on this microphone, I tend to find that chest. I got a very chest voice and there it is here in my vocal booth. You're not worried about my microphone. You don't even care. You're here for the podcast. Listen, I am not, and you know this, if you've been listening to Movie Wars for a while, we're not like trailer reaction guys. There's a lot of great trailer reaction guys and new movie guys, and we're going to start doing more new movies. That's probably the biggest request we get. Other than specific movies, we do ask people, like, hey, why don't you do newer movies? And Drew and I talked about it in our last mini episode when we talked about actor-director duos, but we're dads, you know? We have like 8 kids between the two of us. So, you know, it's harder to get out to new movies unless it's like Paw Patrol. You know, I saw that opening day with my kids. I know that's at the top of every Movie Wars listener, at the top of your list. So put a little feeler out there. I definitely would react to a trailer of a movie I care about deeply or react really badly to a trailer of one of my all-time favorite movies, probably one of my biggest comfort movies, too. And by comfort movie, I mean that movie that you can just throw on at any time and just enjoy it. You know, like There Will Be Blood is a top 20 movie for me, but I wouldn't call it a comfort movie. Like, I'm not going to just sit down and watch There Will Be Blood for the enjoyment. You know, that's an academic exercise, which is amazing in and of itself. And there's definitely a place for that. But The Crow is one of those comfort movies. And, you know, these remakers, I'm going to call them the remakers, these people who are just remaking everything, because that's what we do now. We just remake everything. They did RoboCop, my favorite movie of all time. I thought that was inevitable. They've been trying to redo a sequel to the original RoboCop. And there was a lot of great directors attached to it, but they just could never get it off the ground. And then they did Total Recall. And now Colin Farrell, who I respect a lot now. But at the time, goodness gracious, they did Colin Farrell in Total Recall. And now they're redoing The Crow. And I am just sick over it. But like I said, I'm not a trailer reaction guy, but I do have a lot of trailers this year that I have been keeping my eye out for. This was at the top of the list, the Twisters trailer that came out during the Super Bowl. I love Twister. It's not a top 50 movie for me, but it's so fun, and it's going to be weird without Bill Paxton. I miss him. I think we all miss Bill. We had the Twisters trailer, and then we had Alien Romulus. I thought about lumping Alien Romulus into this one. As you all know, I'm a giant Alien fan. There's just too much to talk about with The Crow here. And I put it out on Instagram. I said, hey, should I talk about this? And a ton of people said yes. I had one no. I'm not mad at you, person who said no. I get it. You just don't have to listen and we'll still be friends. And you can listen to the stuff you like. Isn't that great? Isn't that great? You can curate your own podcasts. But Jonathan, Lori, David, Becky, Etienne, Michael Day, just a few folks who said yes. Yes, do The Crow Trailer Podcast. And that's what I'm doing. So I probably will actually spend the least amount of time talking about the weird trailer itself, which I did not like. I'm just going to put it out there now. I want to talk about why The Crow is so important. Not just to me, but The Crow is an important movie for a lot of reasons. We got to fast forward a little bit, though. If you weren't around or if you weren't old enough or you just didn't pay attention to the time, that's fine. There's no requirement there. There's no like federal government thing saying, hey, were you there when the crow came out? You got to watch The Crow trailer. But Brandon Lee's death, if you didn't know, which most people do, but it's fine if you don't, I'm here to tell you. Brandon Lee, son of Bruce Lee, you know, maybe the greatest film martial artist ever. You know, I think you could probably argue a lot of different ways. I'm not going to act like I'm a specialist there, but I did love Bruce Lee. Obviously, I'm a bit younger, so I did have to retroactively enjoy his work. But his son, Brandon Lee, playing Eric Draven in The Crow, was killed on set. A dummy bullet ignited with some gunpowder lodged its way into his aorta through his navel and killed him. He bled out and it was horrific. And the reason I talk about not being there for when the marketing campaign came out for this film, because it was a little tumultuous, right? Miramax had to buy the distribution rights because the original distribution company dropped it after Brandon Lee died. Because they were like, how are we going to distribute a film that's not done when the main star is dying, or the main star died? His father was Bruce Lee. and his mother is suing the production company for killing their son. How the hell could we ever release this movie? It was kind of viewed as tainted work. But what they ended up doing with the previews is they were advertising it as the tragic last work of Brandon Lee. And you might be asking yourself, well, what else did Brandon Lee do? You know, and he had kind of had his, and this is me pulling from memory, but I've rewatched special features for this film dozens of times. You know, Brandon Lee was kind of viewed as this up and coming guy, you know, and Drew and I are actually going to drop a new mini in a week or two about, you know, will there ever be a circumstance where an Arnold or Sly like era of dominance could ever reoccur again? You know, multiple decades of an action star just completely dominating. You know, and it's going to be an interesting listen for you all because we touch a lot of different bases. We kind of go back and forth. It's a really interesting convo. And there was this time with Arnold and Sly where people were always kind of looking for that next one. Brian Bosworth, for example, played in the film Stone Cold. He was a linebacker for OU. And, you know, his shoulders went out and he didn't play football anymore, but he was jacked. And so he was an action guy for like a film or two. Steven Seagal. Jean-Claude Van Damme was kind of the guy that I think gave people an impetus to think that Brandon Lee could be that next guy, because Jean-Claude Van Damme had a really incredible on-screen martial arts presence. But the problem with Jean-Claude Van Damme is he was very hard to work with. Notably, you know, one of his first roles was he played the Predator. He wore the Predator suit in Predator. But he wanted to do more martial arts. He wanted to show off. And John McTiernan was like, you know what? We don't need a guy wearing a suit to be this dramatic, so we're going to go get someone else. Of course, he also wore the original really horrible suit. If you haven't seen it, go YouTube Jean-Claude Van Damme Predator suit. It was before they did the revamp, and it looked really bad and really goofy. I probably would have quit, too. But the problem with Jean-Claude Van Damme is that no one loves Jean-Claude Van Damme and cocaine more than Jean-Claude Van Damme. He's difficult to work with. He loves his coke, which a lot of Hollywood stars do, but he really liked his coke. And so he never really, I mean, he had some great series, by the way, Universal Soldier, Bloodsport. I'm not saying those aren't good, but those never reached the Terminator. Those never reached the Rambo level. You know, he never quite got there. And a lot of those Universal Soldier films, if I'm remembering correctly, didn't go to theater. And I think he was in a couple of straight to DVD releases, if I'm recalling. I'm going to have to look that up. But Brandon Lee was looked at as this guy, like a really strong martial arts presence. He could also act, and he was also good looking, but he wasn't like so like jacked and sexy that it was distracting. He kind of had this everyman, really great, and that's kind of where it was going. We've talked about this a lot, but you know, the advent of Bruce Willis and Keanu Reeves, really badass guys, but not jacked, you know, not steroided. Maybe some steroids with Bruce Willis, maybe some, not a lot, not Arnold level, not Sly level. But Brandon Lee had this, and he was charming. He was so charming. Rapid Fire, go check it out. It was a really good movie. Some good action stuff in there and some really good heartfelt acting. And so there was this real hope. And we've talked about this. This happens. Chris Farley. A lot of people, when we covered Dumb and Dumber, we uncovered people were expecting him to win a dramatic Oscar at some point in his career because he had that in him. And then he sadly passed away. But the production company, once they got distribution settled up with Miramax, they end up advertising this as his final tragic appearance. And so they're actually, and I don't think it was malicious. I think this is the only way they could get a distribution company and sell this movie to people is by kind of saying, hey, like a guy died making this, the son of a legend, a guy with a lot of potential in this industry died making this movie. And we're gonna put his name. But there's a lot of reasons why The Crow was a fantastic film. You know, and I'm going to go into all these reasons, and I'm going to go, and obviously we just have a trailer, but you can tell a lot from this trailer where they went. I think it's important to note that James O'Barr, who wrote the original comic book, and you know, I love to read the movies, or I love to read the books and the short stories that we cover, you know, the supporting literature, like Stephen King, for example. But when I was a kid, like, I didn't know where to get this thing, you know, like, I didn't know where to find this type. Like, sometimes you would go to Walmart and they would have X-Men comic books at the front when you check out, but they didn't have The Crow, and we didn't have a Barnes & Noble. You know, I grew up in a very redneck area. We didn't have shit. You know, I could get pork rinds at the gas station and maybe a $5 copy of some 1970s straight to, you know, whatever, but we were not getting The Crow comic book where I lived. So I always wanted to read it. And, you know, actually, after I do this, I'm going to go procure it. I'm going to go read it. Because apparently, the new movie is really closer. The new trailer has shown that it's going to be really close to the comic book material. And I don't think that's necessarily a good thing. There's a great article out there by Den of Geek talking about The Crow and talking about how, you know, there was a time period where, yes, they did make comic book movies, but they definitely always leaned noir. You know, comic book movies weren't always meant to be overly cartoonish. There's so many great examples of IP that were based on comic books that didn't necessarily have this over-the-top cartoonish comic book feel. If you haven't seen Wes Craven's 1982 Swamp Thing, really, really interesting movie. Like, you all know, I'm not the Marvel guy. I'm not the comic book guy on the podcast. That's Drew. Drew really loves and understands and imbibes in Marvel, and it's great. And I guess DC as well. But Wes Craven really did an interesting thing with his interpretation of Swamp Thing. The older Captain America film, I think it was 80s. I can't remember if it was late 70s or 80s. But there was a Captain America film that felt very based in reality. You know, CGI wasn't out. And even older films, or sorry, even newer films that were based on comic books in the 90s didn't have the capability of CGI, which meant a lot of those movies were kind of based in reality. And so you almost have these noirish type comic book movies. And again, maybe just do a Google search if you're interested in reading this Den of Geek article. So let's just get started on some things here. One of the first things that really makes the original Crow special, aside from the whole Brandon Lee arc, first of all, was the villains. You know, these villains had personality. Each had their own way of dressing. Each had kind of a very specific skill sets and uniqueness that made, they all had funny, crazy names. And even Eric Draven, his character calls it out. What does he call them? Fun, jolly nicknames. When he's taking out Gideon in the pawn shop, he calls them fun, jolly nicknames. Because the amazing John Polito, who plays Gideon, with his crazy voice and his, they are the cops, man! You know, he has that kind of crazy, raspy snarl that comes from, like, deep in his esophagus, somewhere between the chest and the tonsils in there. And he talks about Fun Boy and Tintin and T-Bird and Skank, which is funny, played by Angel David, who is this funny, like, really kind of chill guy. And, of course, the amazing David Patrick Kelly playing T-Bird. And then Top Dollar, Michael Wincott. Nah, they are. Not the same as I'm doing them the same because I'm not an impressionist. That's why I need Phil here. Just these really identifiable, crazy. And I love Tintin. He's not in it long because Draven gets to him first. But, you know, he has these knives played by Lawrence Mason. You know, and he's really good with these knives. Yes, there's always been villains with knives. But, dude, Tintin is, like, skilled. And he's got this, it's hard to describe, but he's got this just kind of, like, flair, kind of this style. And he twirls the knives. And then the way that Draven takes out each of these guys is also unique. Kind of, like, aligning with who they are. He kind of kills them in that fashion, if that makes sense. He kind of mirrors those villains' personality. When he kills Tintin, he has the knives and the syringes, and he puts them in the shape of a crow on his chest. Oh, and the way that he takes out T-Bird by taping his eyes open and tying him to his beloved car, tying him to the driver's seat and putting the cement block down and driving him into a lake and the car exploding as it goes into the lake. And they zoom in on T-Bird's face and his eyes. He can't shut his eyes. He can't close his eyes. He has to see it. There is a brutality here, you know, and that's another point. Aside from these really amazing, unique villains, there was just a brutality. And speaking of villains, it's a worthwhile note. Poor Michael Massey plays Fun Boy. Fun Boy is a really interesting villain. You know, he's on morphine. He's dating Darla, who is Sarah's mom. Sarah's, of course, the kid that had a really close relationship with Shelley, with Eric's wife. And such a great tie-in that Fun Boy is dating her, and he's got her hooked on morphine, and they do morphine together, and they inject it, and it was such a moment of clarity when Draven, like, wrenches her wrist, and the morphine comes out of her veins, and tells her she has a daughter waiting at home. Michael Massey, though, anyway, sorry, I don't know why I went on that tangent, but Michael Massey was the one holding the gun that killed Brandon Lee, and the guilt and the shame that he felt, poor guy. Imagine being the guy that happened to, and he took a break from acting for a long time, because he just could not cope with it. And there's obviously no wonder. I mean, that's a horrific thing to go through. But going back to the brutality, you know, these are horrific guys, but it's not overly violent. Yes, there is some violence in there, but it makes me think of the trailer. The trailer looks really, really violent for the new one, but it's very CGI, the blood, the shotgun to the head, a lot of kind of just blood interlaced and some brutality, but it's a different kind of brutality because so much of why Brandon Lee and the studio know, they knew exactly who they wanted to direct, and they knew they wanted Brandon Lee to play Eric Draven. And the brutality was a lot different. It was, you know, he was a martial artist and he could fight. And so many of the scenes that are, they are violent, don't get me wrong, but so much of it is him exerting that physicality. One of the scenes that comes to mind, that amazing Nine Inch Nails song, which we're going to talk about the soundtrack next, because holy smokes. But, you know, Draven jumping from rooftop to rooftop. It's the moment, a few moments after he's resurrected by the Crow and he realizes why he's back, because he has to avenge Shelley. And he's realizing his power. And so they got the Dead Souls Joy Division cover by Nine Inch Nails. And he's jumping and he's grabbing these things. And he's like moving across rooftops and jumping through, you know, heavy rain. It's such a beautiful visual. So much of what this character was this kind of physicality where it looks like in this new trailer, by the way, love Bill Skarsgård. I feel bad that I'm going to shit on that trailer because he's a great actor. I love what he did for It. He brought his own kind of physicality to Pennywise and really reinvigorated that character, you know, from the beloved 90s. And it's not his fault, you know, and I think, you know, I obviously we only have a trailer and the movie's not out, but it looks really bad. But at least they got someone who I think is at least worth it to attempt to resume this character. But the brutality looks a lot different. And Bill Skarsgård is jacked. I mean, he looks chiseled. He's got a 12-pack. I don't even see ribs. Like, how do you fit all these abs in with all these rib cages, with all these ribs? It's just wild. He looks great. But anyway, I don't see a lot of kung fu. I see a lot of shotguns and axes, and I see him getting shot a lot. But I don't see any of that Brandon Lee style martial arts at work here. Next, we're going to talk about the soundtrack. You all know I'm a music guy. I moved here to play music. I moved to Nashville to play music in 2009. Huge, just music lover. I collect vinyl. And I remember some of the trailers, not all the trailers. Some of them had more orchestral score type stuff, but they had that Nine Inch Nails cover of Dead Souls by Joy Division. If you don't remember or haven't heard it, go check it out. It's worth it. That song, I was hooked. And the soundtrack to this, I got on CD. It was just over and over again. And if you all recall, you know, my favorite band of all time is Alice in Chains. And I loved all the music that came out of Seattle. I don't use the word grunge because Chris Cornell and Kurt Cobain and Eddie Vedder and all those guys hated that word because all of them sounded very different. Grunge was really just a way of saying they came from Seattle. It wasn't a sound necessarily. It maybe is because it was all the antithesis of the 80s music that they were decrying and against, but their sound wasn't necessarily the same other than the fact that it was anti-80s. Kurt Cobain opting, of course, for simpler guitar solos and instead of glorifying sex and hair metal and drugs, even though they were on drugs, it was more of glorifying the darkness and that Gen X flavor of life. But I didn't love Stone Temple Pilots. I liked a few of their songs on the radio, but I wasn't out there collecting them. My mom had a ton of Nirvana, a ton of Pearl Jam, a lot of Soundgarden, but we didn't really have Stone Temple. And then I hear Big Empty on the track where T-Bird is setting off that first bomb, the first time we meet on Devil's Night, the first time we meet T-Bird and crew after the horrific incident with Shelley, obviously. And all of a sudden, time to take her home. And then this, like, you know, the DeLeo brothers with the sleazy slide guitar and the sleazy bass line, which is so signature for those guys. If you don't know, the DeLeo brothers composed almost all the music and wrote almost all the music. Scott Weiland, one of the best frontmen of all time, did not write a lot of the music, but he was an incredible singer, great dancer, great frontman. God rest your soul. And I was hooked. And that soundtrack introduced me to so many of my favorite bands. I'm an avid Nine Inch Nails fan. One of my favorite vinyls, maybe my favorite vinyl I own, is the Fragile, a special edition, 4 discs. Incredible vinyl. Stone Temple Pilots got me. Pantera is on there. Rage Against the Machine, Helmet. Jesus and the Mary Chain. And then, of course, there's a couple of other proprietary tracks that are written by you know, the bands that are playing in the concert hall. So they're kind of like written for the movie. Really good stuff. Just great music. And I remember hearing that bass line while Eric Draven's jumping from roof to roof. That boom, doom, 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 doo. They keep calling me. That's how great at singing I am. Just really, really incredible stuff. And lastly, there's a superhero element, kind of going back to the comic book thing, but, you know, the comic, from what I understand, he really is this dead rock star superhero. And it looks like in this new trailer, they're really going to play it up. Let's get to the trailer. We got 2 minutes here, and I'm not going to play it here because I get sick of going back and forth with the copyright and all that stuff with podcast and what's called fair use. Not going to bore you with that, but the makeup's different. It doesn't look like early on he's wearing the makeup, you know, but it does look closer to what maybe you would have seen in the comics. Shorter hair, different imagery, different physicality, lots of real aggressive violence. Again, the original Crow was very, very violent. I mean, there's a part where Top Dollar stabs a guy in the throat with a sword and it comes out the other side. He stabs Gideon with a sword through the throat. It's brutal, but it's not like hyper blood. It's very much in the physicality and kind of the upfront melee type of violence. It just looks like they're really into it. And it looks like there's this reincarnation element too. It looks like he dies and comes back and he goes to this middle world where the crows rule. That's what it looks like from the trailer anyway. But like I said, it is apparent that they did lean into the comic more for the James O'Barr comic. And overall, it just looks like they're also leaning heavily into some sexualization here of whoever plays Shelley. Looks like it's an artist who I don't know. FKA Twigs. I don't know. Does FKA stand for something? I'm so old now. Like, I see FKA Twigs. I don't know who that is. The only really notable actor besides Bill Skarsgård that I see is Danny Houston from Yellowstone, who looks like he's playing a quieter type of criminal here. But he doesn't even have a name. Like, I'm looking at the IMDb. This movie's coming out in June or July. Or July, I'm pretty sure. And we don't have any names here. The detective's name is Detective Mitch. There's a car dealer. Uninformed Cop 1 is on the top of the cast here on IMDb. Uninformed Cop 1 made it. He's only he's five rows below Bill Skarsgård here. Who are these people? And that's my biggest call out from watching this new trailer. All the criminals and villains are wearing black turtlenecks. They all look the same. It's like they look like beat poets, like they're going to protest the Vietnam War and kill Draven with bongos. It's like, let's write poetry, smoke cigarettes, drink coffee, and kill people with bongos here. Protest. And even from the trailer from the original Crow, you see the distinction, very unique villains. I'm telling you, if you haven't watched it in a while, go watch it. Without the villains, it's not a great movie. Brandon Lee did fantastic. It's not about him without these villains, but him plus the uniqueness of those villains. David Patrick Kelly is just so subdued. He's such an evil dude. They're all snorting ashes of dead people and snorting cocaine and just they're so like obsessed with their acts of violence. Like they love Devil's Night and they're almost closer to the Joker in The Dark Knight, in my opinion. Not necessarily the performance. I'm not saying they're delivering Heath Ledger style performances. But what I am saying is that they love their craft of violence. They love their crime. They're not just mailed in criminals doing things, taking up space. Yeah, there are some of those guys in The Crow, and you know, Brandon Lee takes a lot of them out in that amazing scene where he's doing karate and jumping around on the table and the flashing lights like a disco ball, and you're getting these really crazy images of him shooting people with the lights flashing above. It looks like this like kind of almost like flashy disco ball thing. It was incredible. And yeah, there's a lot of those guys, those kind of like, hey, insert bad guy here, but there's so many distinct bad guys. Like there's like five or six notable villains with unique names who have unique skills. And I'm not saying that that's not going to be in the new one because I have a 2-minute trailer to go on, but I can tell you already that they're not highlighted. They don't look different. They don't look unique. They just look like guys. And you know what's going to happen to them. And I'm going to close with the last point. The biggest issue is that this has been done before. They have tried to reinvigorate the Crow IP. They had some bad sequels, City of Angels notably. And if you didn't know it, one of the lowest rated movies on Rotten Tomatoes and one of the worst movies is this Wicked Prayer, The Crow, that came out. You're not going to believe it. Edward Furlong played the main character here. And what they did was, is because Draven was Draven, they would apply the Crow lore to these new wronged, killed protagonists. And they would wear the makeup. And that was about as far as it went. It didn't have this deep lore. It was that surface level, going to wear the white makeup, I'm going to rise from the dead, I'm going to exact revenge. And apparently, and I tried, you cannot get into this Wicked Prayer, 2005, The Crow Wicked Prayer. Edward Furlong, who in between, and God bless him, I feel bad, like he, you know, he struggled with addiction, and ever since his Terminator 2 thing, he's had up and down. Obviously, he was amazing in American History X 2, but unfortunately has had a real up and down life, and then all of a sudden, he's The Crow. He's reprising this infamous cult-following film, this movie that the son of a great living legend who was embarking on his own path of legendary dies. And we're going to put Edward Furlong in there in a straight-to-DVD movie. Dennis Hopper's in this movie, okay? And I have a theory. Whenever you see a really great actor, like a Dennis Hopper, who is obviously legendary, watch Apocalypse Now, you'll know what I'm talking about. Whenever he's in a, whenever they're doing these straight to DVD movies like Nick Cage, Wesley Snipes, they owe the IRS. You know, they're always going to blame an uncle. By the way, go and research it. Look at athletes who lose all their money, like Vince Young, Nick Cage. They all got an uncle who's their financier or their accountant, and maybe that does come into play. But they owe the IRS, and so they're doing straight to DVD movies to pay off those foreclosed mansions. Because we need 9 of them. We need 9 mansions. It's my uncle. I blame my uncle. It's not your uncle. It's Uncle Sam who is going after your assets. But all that to say, I want you to go after you listen to this podcast, go just type, go Google the remake of The Crow. And you're going to see I'm not alone here. The original director, the great Alex Proyas, Australian director who went on to direct I, Robot and a few, oh, and Dark City, which was a beloved movie. He said this is going to tarnish Brandon Lee's legacy. Ernie Hudson says he respects Bill Skarsgård, although he doesn't say he remembers his name. He says, I can't remember his name, but he respects him. But says, this is Brandon Lee's role, and I won't be rewatching it. People coming out of the woodworks. The Crow remake looks like a soulless Hollywood abomination. I don't love Forbes, but I love this headline. Eric Kane, I love you. What a great headline. The Crow remake looks like a soulless Hollywood abomination. Yes. I couldn't have said it better myself. People are viscerally reacting to this trailer. I thought it was just me, and I didn't want to do a reaction trailer, but then I saw everyone else who agrees. This is Brandon Lee's role. He died making it. He had a long life ahead of him. We could be enjoying Brandon Lee today. He had that level of skill. He was going to bring that to us. It was going to be a gift to us. He's gone. Let this be his last gift to us. Let this be a fine bow on what people call the Lee family curse. With Bruce and Brandon and their deaths and the mystery surrounding them. I'm going to finish now. I'm done. I think I've said my piece. I'm glad I'm not alone here. Let me know what you think. Post, send us messages, share this podcast out. Please tell your friends about us. We're growing. We continue to grow, but it's hard to grow without our beautiful fans sharing us. I love you so much. I just want to thank you for spending your time with us. And it's amazing to me that people reach out and listen. I had a new fan reach out this week and say, hey, I got an intense job, and if it wasn't for the podcast, I don't know that I could get through. You know, and I've been in that seat. I've had that job where if I just didn't have that beloved podcast or that beloved song in my ear, I don't know that I can make it to 5 o'clock. So thank you for that. And thank you all. Let's go rewatch The Crow this week. Go look at some of these articles. Go read that Den of Geek article. Watch The Crow and let me know. Do a rewatch and let me know how amazing it is. Or if you don't like it, that too, but you're going to think it's amazing. Anyway, love you. Bye.
Movie Wars.